From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. If you live in a North Carolina town, city, or village, you probably have an election to decide this year. What, did I hear a snore? You're thinking, I can catch this podcast later, let me just hit pause, or maybe I want to listen to music during lunch instead of talking heads. Why is it that municipal elections are so reviled, or worse, totally ignored? I have my own theory, but give this discussion a chance today. Here's why. First of all, it's the only episode of Coastline dedicated to elections in the fall of 2021. The only one. This is it. Secondly, WHQR News Director Ben Schachman is with us to make the discussion lively, entertaining, and sexy. Well, maybe not that last thing, but here's what we can promise. You will walk away with a better idea of who's on the ballot and why and what the pressing local issues are this year. And you don't even have to listen to politicians today. But if you're a local political junkie and want more, there is help available. Tune in to Ben Schachman's show, The Newsroom, or just check out the reporter coverage at WHQR.org. And I am so pleased that news director Ben Schachman joins me now. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Rachel. I'm very happy to be here.
So happy to have you here. So why is it that we care so much about local elections and most other people don't, as evidenced in very low voter turnout year after year in the munis?
Sure. So I can give you two major reasons. One is there's no gerrymandering. You got a fair fight. You know, it's not a guaranteed Democratic district. It's not a guaranteed Republican district. It's every year. Or every other year, rather, every odd year, it's a fair fight. So that's, I mean, your vote really does count. In 2019, city council for Wilmington candidate Paul Lawler lost by, I believe it was five votes. And I try not to rub that in. But it just shows you, you know, if you could grab five people at the coffee shop and say, can you just come with me down to CFCC and we're just going to vote? So
that's why we care.
That's why we
care.
Because
it's not gerrymandered, and it's very hard to rig.
It's very hard to rig, and I think the reason people listening should care is that it will actually make a difference in your life soon.
And we hear that a lot because, well, partly because we say it every municipal election season. But can you offer a couple of clear-cut examples as to why that is?
Absolutely. So the things that we hear people, I don't want to say complain, but they're upset about the issues. You know, what's getting taught in schools? How do the police interact with the public? How much are your taxes? Why is the skyline the way it is? Why is there so much traffic? Why is the bus system apparently unable to get me from point A to point B in less than 4 hours? All of those things depend intimately on who's in charge at the most local level. Your congressman doesn't care about that. Your state senator doesn't care about that. The president of the United States can't be bothered with every public transportation program in every town in the country. That's insane. It's the local elections that really matter.
And so this year, you are handling all of the elections through your show, The Newsroom, and through expanded reporter coverage as well. You guys are doing all of the candidate interviews. And so you talked about how you were going to approach that coverage and how you were going to interview the candidates. How did you approach it?
So there's lots of ways to do this. And we thought we would get a little nerdy. And I know you promised this would be sexy, but sexy and nerdy aren't mutually exclusive.
I hope.
So we wanted to stick really close to the policies. And here's why. It's not uncommon for local politicians to effectively campaign on national social issues. You know, you're for or against defunding the police at the national level. You know, your concerns are the Second Amendment, abortion rights. And those aren't things that the, you know, town council of Carolina Beach or the city council of Wilmington will ever really have a meaningful say in. So we wanted to first preempt that and just say, no, you really have to talk about the issues. We also thought, well, you know, this gives us a chance to let people know these are the issues that are out there. You know, a lot of people are, you know, you're concerned about what's in front of you. And so if you're coming to the ballot box with one issue on your mind, you know, sometimes that you have horse blinders on a little bit. So we wanted to say, you know, these aren't just good questions for people who will be in power, but these are also all of the social issues that are directly connected to local votes, that you can think about that and kind of mull that around in your head before you go and cast your vote.
So when you're approaching it this way, do you need to adjust your questions based on the municipality you're dealing with? And how much do you have to adjust? I mean, this is one of the drums that I used to beat all the time. Even if you live in the Wilmington city limits, there are lots of reasons that you should be interested in what's happening in the town of Leland over the bridge, for instance. But what does that mean in terms of how you approach the issues from town to city to village? Although I don't think you have any villages
this year. We don't have any villages this year. But
hamlets?
Ooh, no. If only Hamlet was an option for incorporation.
Yeah.
We could use more hamlets.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. A lot of the answers we got, specifically in the city of Wilmington race, dealt with this kind of multi-jurisdictional issue where things like transportation or homelessness or, you know, opioid abuse, they don't care about city boundaries or county boundaries. You know, the fact that it's, you know, Leland is the fastest growing place on earth right now. It's not too much of an exaggeration. How do you get from Leland to Wilmington? If you want to take a bus, they canceled the bus service.
Right.
You know, so those issues cropped up again and again and again. And there are a lot of, you know, interagency efforts on these fronts that we wanted to see, you know, this is how Carolina Beach, take beach renourishment, for example. You know, that takes some coordination between Wrightsville Beach and Carolina Beach and Kerry Beach. So we did tailor the questions to the towns because we really wanted to know, okay, you know, this is what we've heard about this area. But we also wanted to see those sort of intersections about, you know, what do Leland and Wilmington have in common and what could they actually maybe in some bright future day do together?
Which is a wonderful thought, you know, regional
right now,
collaboration.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the elections and the municipal elections, it is still very confusing to a lot of people who perhaps don't live in incorporated areas and don't necessarily know what that means to live in the unincorporated part of the county, whether it's New Hanover, Brunswick, or Pender. So what are the races this year? And you don't have to list them all, but can you just sort of explain what is not on the ballot that people often get confused about?
Yes. So not on the ballot are any of your federal offices. Not on your ballot are any of your state offices. So your state representative or your state senator, your county commissioners, your school board, none of those are on the ballot. This is mayors, councilmen, town aldermen, stuff like that. So Wrightsville Beach, Carolina Beach, City of Wilmington, Leland, so on and so forth.
So there are people then who live in New Hanover County who don't necessarily live either in a beach town or within the city of Wilmington limits. And those folks don't have anything to vote for.
That's right. In fact, you can look yourself up. If you just Google, you know, North Carolina voter lookup or NC voter lookup, put in your name, you'll see a sample ballot. And if you live in the unincorporated county, it'll say no ballots this year. And if you live in the side, because we know people who, especially if you rent and you don't pay property taxes, you might not know whether you live inside or outside. So you can go online and look that up and find out whether or not you got a skin in the game.
What about voter ID? Is that required this year?
No. So on New Year's Eve 2019, a federal district court put an injunction on this, and we've been in a holding pattern ever since. But right now, a photo ID can be very useful, but you don't need it.
Right. Now, early voting started October 14th. It ends October 30th, and that's true for New Hanover, Brunswick, Pender counties. But early voting is a little different in New Hanover versus Brunswick County. How can I early vote if I live, and this is where it gets confusing, because I'm saying New Hanover County, but we're only talking to the people in New Hanover County who live in the city of Wilmington, the town of Wrightsville Beach, Kerry Beach, or Carolina Beach. So how can they early vote?
So the best place to get this information, again, is to Google either New Hanover County Board of Elections or Brunswick County Board of Elections. But early voting, sometimes known as one-stop voting, means if you are not a registered voter, you can go and take care of that and vote all at the same time And I've done this before in the past. It doesn't take that long, maybe 5-10 minutes. You do need either a valid photo ID or a document that has your address on it. So that can be a utility bill, a bank statement. You can use a copy, and you can show them it on your smartphone. It has to be from the institution. So if you go to, you know, wellsfargo.com or, you know, dukeprogress.com.
And that's if you're registering at the same time.
Yes.
But if you're already registered.
If you're already registered, it's easy breezy, lemon squeezy.
Right. And in New Hanover County, I think there are 3 locations where you can early vote. In Brunswick County, it's only 1.
Yeah.
It's the cooperative extension in Bolivia. There are also differences in terms of voting on the weekends. I think in New Hanover County, there is weekend voting.
I believe it is Saturday, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to direct people to the website because they have all the information in one place, and then I won't be wrong.
That's a really good idea. And there are other sort of random boards that are on the ballot. For instance, in Leland, H2GO is a water utility.
Yes.
That serves part of Brunswick County. And we're going to get into that when we come back in the next segment. And there is also, I believe, an election for the folks in the city of Southport for the Board of Trustees on Dozier Memorial Hospital.
Yes, that is correct. And H2GO, I'm looking forward to getting to that because that actually had a lot to do with the Leland election, too.
That's right.
Yeah. One of the most convoluted stories we have ever covered.
Oh, it's this fun. Is going to be so fun.
It's going to be so much
about.
Fun.
Yes. Stay with us. You're listening to Coastline. It's the only election-focused Coastline of fall 2021. WHQR News Director Ben Schachman is with me today. After this short break, we're also going to find out why a mayoral candidate in Wrightsville Beach is suing his own town and the other beach towns in New Hanover County. Trust me, it's juicy. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. So I asked our listeners on our new Facebook page with the obnoxiously long but necessary, it's a long story, name WHQR Coastline, hosted by Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. So in this post, I encouraged people to ask a question about the municipal elections or post about what confuses them, which I give you is hard to do in a public forum. But not only has no one said a word on this post, there's one like, I think, last time I checked, and only about 50 people even engaged with it, which for that kind of a post is pitiful. So if you're confused by what the municipal elections are all about, you're in the right place. WHQR News Director Ben Schachman is giving us the thumbnail sketch version of candidate interviews, which, if you want to hear more of, you can check out the newsroom or just find reporter coverage at whqr.org. And Ben Schachman, just before we went to break, you sort of dangled the tantalizing fruit of the H2GO story in Leland. So for those folks who are not familiar with the H2GO saga, which covers, I think, almost a decade now, it's a long and interesting one if you're into that sort of thing. Where are we now? What is this water utility?
Sure. So real quick, elevator ride history. H2GO was created in the 70s when there was nothing in that part of Brunswick County, not even county utilities. And sanitary districts like H2GO exist for that very reason. Well, who's around to give water and sewer to the few people who are there? H2GO.
Right.
Flash forward about 20 years, Leland gets founded. Is very small, but grows very quickly. I believe at one point it actually grew at over 1,000%, which is just mind-boggling.
Yes.
And Leland and H2GO grew around each other. And if you look at a map, it is just an entanglement of various areas. And they were competing for customers because, as unsexy as it might sound, water and sewer is actually big business. In 2017, things got contentious when the outgoing H2 board, right before a municipal election, illegally gave all of the assets away to Belleville. This sparked multiple years and millions of dollars of legal fees. Finally, more recently, there's been kind of a kumbaya moment where H2Go and Leland are going to effectively merge.
Right. Now, the reason that move that was deemed to be not legal happened is because there was this big fight over building a reverse osmosis plant. And I think what's interesting about part of H2Go's history is that they wanted to build an RO plant before anybody knew that we had these toxic, unregulated compounds in the drinking water that our current treatment systems could not remove. And then when the news broke, and I think it was 2017, about PFAS in the water, suddenly we found out, and reverse osmosis is one of the best, most effective ways to remove those unregulated compounds from the water. So then there was this fight over, do we let Brunswick County build a reverse osmosis plant and perhaps have a more cost-efficient situation? That was the argument for letting them do that. Or do we let little H2Go charge ahead with their separate plant and their smaller customer base?
Yeah, it's a wild story. And again, utility is big business. It's also kind of a crazy business because H2Go was buying its water from Brunswick County, which was buying its water from the Lower Cape Fear Water and Sewer Authority. And so this, the initial argument, the first time I reported anything on H2Go about this reverse osmosis plant was that it would be from an aquifer. So they could get their own water and no longer have to, you know, pay Brunswick County and by extension Lower Cape Fear. So when the Gen X story broke, it completely reframed the argument. They actually had mentioned before the Gen X expose that, you know, a side benefit of this would be, you know, not having to worry about what was in the river.
Right.
Once they found out what was in the river, that became the sole focus of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so you're saying you describe this as a kumbaya moment now, but there's still, there's a battle here. And in terms of the outcome of this election, it can go a couple of different ways.
Yeah, so it's not a done deal. It's trending that way, but it's not a done deal. I will say many of the Leland candidates, like many of the people in Leland I've spoken to, had a similar sense that they were either kind of confused about what had happened, frustrated by the sheer amounts of bickering and legal bills that came with that. It's very expensive bickering when your lawyer is charging you $400 an hour to bicker on your behalf.
Right. And on whose behalf?
Yes.
Because this is a legit question for the taxpayers in the town of Leland. Like, is it Leland taxpayers who are bickering with each other, and then those who are already H2Go customers are fighting?
It was confusing, expensive, and frustrating.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, most people feel like combining the assets of the town of Leland and H2Go is a good idea, but there is some lingering angst from that. There is actually some concern about how H2Go's network outside of Leland will be used to encourage annexation. So if you're in favor of a growing Leland that is adding new lands, because the towns and cities can no longer forcibly annex outlying areas since 2012, they can't do that anymore.
Right.
They kind of have to entice them. Again, water and sewer, unsexy, but big business. So one of the things you can offer developer to say, hey, annex your land into our town, become part of Leland, you get this great water and sewer package that we'll help you with. And Leland has spent millions of dollars in that kind of incentive.
Right.
So, again, for people who want Leland to continue to grow, this is a good thing. One of the candidates, Allison Dunlop, actually said that was her big concern about H2Go.
And so right now, just to be clear, you're talking about candidates
for Leland.
For Leland Town Council.
Correct, yes. So Leland Town Council candidate Allison Dunlop, her one concern was that this merger would facilitate bringing more areas into the town, and that would kind of take Leland away from its, you know, homier, you know, more small town feel into what it is kind of becoming, which is a bigger and bigger place.
So she opposes that.
She doesn't like that part of it. Yeah. I don't know if it's enough for her to deep six the deal. And again, one council member couldn't do that anyway, but she certainly had concerns about it. And I think she speaks for other people in Leland who probably feel the same way.
Now, on Leland Town Council, it's an interesting race because there are two open seats. There are six candidates. Not one of those candidates is an incumbent. Pat Battleman and Bob Corriston are not running again. So Allison Dunlap is a conservative Republican, and she is one of those six: Jason Gaver, Louis Harmati, Richard Holloman, Bill McHugh, and Nicholas Newell. And Ben, you probably should talk about these supposedly nonpartisan elections, which is getting harder and harder to say out loud and be credible, because these a lot of our candidates across municipalities are leading with their partisan affiliation. Allison Dunlap is one of those. Jason Gaver is a Republican. So is Louis Harmati and Richard Holloman. Bill McHugh is a Democrat. And Nicholas Newell is leading with his unaffiliation because he likes to say potholes don't care about your political affiliation.
Okay, so I'll leave the pothole comment aside. But here's what I'll say, is that we have, as journalists, for a long time been waiting for the deep polarization of national politics to make its way down into the local election. And I think it's safe to say, if it wasn't here in 2020, it is sure as hell here now.
Yeah.
One of the first part of this I want to touch on real quick is funding. And this is specifically in the city of Wilmington. Shout out to my former colleague, Preston Lennon, at Port City Daily, who broke down the funding so far, the campaign financing, of the city of Wilmington candidate race. Just a staggering amount of money, six figures, being raised by and through GOP-related factions for the candidates who are Republicans in the city of Wilmington, which now includes Charlie Rivenbark, who recently changed his affiliation, although many will say Charlie has been a Republican all his life. Right. But in any case, just a lot of money, you know, tens of thousands of dollars per candidate, which translates into radio ads, television ads, signs, posters, flyers.
How much money is the Democratic Party funneling into Democratic candidates?
Much, much less. Yeah, it's asymmetrical warfare here. So funding is a big part of it. And again, this is totally legal. I'm not implying that anything, you know, untoward is happening here. If anything, the fundraising efforts by the GOP for their candidates in Wilmington is pretty impressive.
But what you're pointing out is that this is a relatively new trend. In the past, political parties have not paid as much attention to these local races because they are more about the fact that, as you guys have been saying throughout this election cycle in the newsroom, stormwater management isn't sexy or interesting, but when it rains for a couple of hours on a Thursday afternoon, New Center Drive becomes undrivable.
Yes, absolutely. And having covered campaign finance for City of Wilmington in 2019 and 2017, the biggest donations were from realtors, which probably won't shock a lot of people in Wilmington. But Roy Carroll, Chuck Schoeninger, developers like that, We saw, you know, $4,000, $5,000, but this is a different animal this year. So that's part of it. The other part of it is, of course, the sort of big national level sociocultural stuff that we're hearing at campaign events that doesn't have anything to do with stormwater.
Like critical race theory
or, you know, immigration policy. I mean, I can't think of anything more divorced from what you would do on a day-to-day basis, just to be fair. As a city councilor in Wilmington, North Carolina, which does not have a contiguous border with any other nation, than immigration policy. But these issues are important to voters, even if they're not directly tied to the office these people are running for. These candidates are trying to, you know, those seats, that's just not where those decisions get made from. But it's a clear way to sort of signal, hey, here's who I am, here's what I believe. And if you want a like-minded person in office, regardless of how you think I'll do on the actual city-related issues, here's how you know. And that's been more intense this year than I've ever seen it.
Just to put a button on the Leland H2Go issue, there is also on the ballot the board. There are three open seats on H2Go, the Water Utilities Board. There are actually four candidates running, and the outcome of this election could sway the direction of the completion of this reverse osmosis plant.
Yeah, and I think the debate will come down to, you know, 2 years ago when we, on Coastline, right, we heard these same arguments. the Brunswick County version, which could, in theory, provide RO filtered water to everybody, was not nearly as far along. Now it is. It's much closer. It had to, there's been some cost overruns. There's been pushbacks, but that's showbiz, kids. But that's a, it's a tighter race now between H2GO and the county. So I think that will be kind of the decision that people have to make. Is this still worth it? And I think, you know, the impact on H2GO rates is the bottom line is the bottom line. That's what people are maybe voting for.
You're listening to Coastline. It's the single edition of this show that will focus on elections in the fall of 2021. And WHQR News Director Ben Schachtman is with us today to offer a primer of sorts on this year's ballot, who can vote, what's notable, and what's just plain interesting, whether you can vote on it or not. If you're craving more in terms of local politics, you can find Ben's show, The Newsroom, wherever you get your podcasts, or check out the coverage at WHQR.org. Now let's go to Wrightsville Beach and hit the beach towns in New Hanover County kind of quickly. We are going to get to Wilmington. Oh, I promise we'll get to Wilmington. But we're saving the best for last. And I don't mean that in terms of location, by the way. Just you'll see. So Wrightsville Beach, there is a mayoral race this year. And one of the challenger, Greg Buscemi, who's an attorney, is seeking that office. He is the challenger. Who is the incumbent? And why is Greg Buscemi suing his own town?
Sure. So I will say, full disclosure, we haven't interviewed Daryl Mills yet. We will next week. The incumbent. He's the current mayor. And so we will get his perspective on this. But we don't want to make this a single issue, you know, interview. We'll also be asking him about parking, and which is part of the problem.
Right.
And beach renourishment and economic development and all those things you should ask the mayor of a town. But the reason Greg Buscemi is suing his own town and many other towns is complicated, so I'll give you a super short version. Decades ago, Wrightsville Beach got permission to use money from on-street parking and send it to their general fund and use it for whatever they wanted. So why is that important? That sounds like the most arcane bureaucratic nonsense.
They had to get special permission for that.
They had to get special permission because otherwise, in North Carolina, that's illegal. You can only use your parking money for your parking program. So you want new meters, you want the meter readers to have little go-karts, you want to build whatever, you know, it has to be related for parking, and towns and cities and villages have parking funds. Here's the money line. What this lets Wrightsville Beach do is use that titanic amount of money they get from the parking and use it to drive down the cost of taxes. So people in Wrightsville Beach actually have a lower tax rate than people who live in Wilmington, despite being a much smaller town. You wouldn't expect that. Every other beach town up and down the coast, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, way higher. Eventually, the other towns got in on it. There was an amendment to that state act that allowed Carolina Beach and Curie Beach to do the same thing. Wilmington's also included in that. And I once called the city of Wilmington and asked, why don't you jack up your parking rates and use all that money and put it in your general fund? And the city manager at the time said, why would I want to alienate all the people who want to come to downtown Wilmington? We would never do that. In fact, we're trying to give away parking, which they were at the time. They were actually increasing the amount of free parking that you could get in the parking decks. So the question has been, why does Wrightsville Beach charge so much for parking and then pocket the cash? So Greg Buscemi's lawsuit, to bring this full circle, is that this is actually a violation of the state constitution based on how the law is actually set up. Basically says, you know, you can't do certain things. You can't make certain laws with respect to things like parking, and that they never should have gotten this exemption in the first place. And now these towns, which it's not just Wrightsville Beach, are going to fight like hell because this is the backbone of their town financial infrastructure. In fact, they get about as much from parking as they do from property tax. And if you've been to Wrightsville Beach, you can imagine property tax counts for quite a bit of money, even with a lower rate. So walking away from that amount of money is not something the town is likely to do without a fight. And I asked Greg if he thought that suing the town he was running to be mayor of would hurt his chances. And he said he was less concerned with that than he was with the importance of people actually taking the North Carolina Constitution seriously. So do with that what you will.
The two other municipalities besides the city of Wilmington in New Hanover County are Carolina Beach and Curie Beach. All the beach towns struggle with the question of parking, what to do about it and how to deal with it. And they have different ways of handling it. So In the couple of minutes that we have left in this segment, can you kind of explain just how those two municipalities are approaching it, and what's likely to what are voters really voting on besides the people in those elections?
So the contrast between Wrightsville Beach and Carolina Beach, I think, is crucial. And this came up in a couple of interviews we had with people from Carolina Beach, is that Wrightsville Beach, to people in Carolina Beach, represents one possible future. And Carolina Beach raising its parking rates to match those of Wrightsville Beach gives you an insight into that. Some people in Carolina Beach think that would be a good thing. You've got nice homes. You've got the town coffers are overflowing. Carolina Beach has struggled with its fund balance, has struggled with expensive infrastructure projects, struggles with infrastructure, which costs money. So that's one possible version. Let's be like Wrightsville Beach. Charge more money for parking and go down that path. Other people feel like the way that is done in Wrightsville Beach alienates people. It alienates tourists. It creates an environment that basically excludes poor people, just to be blunt about it. Mm-hmm. It's exclusionary. It turns it into a yacht club.
Right.
And there are people who feel that that's, you know, completely diametrically opposed to what Carolina Beach is all about. So that's one thing you're kind of voting for, is what kind of Carolina Beach do you want?
So it's kind of the ethos of the town in a way.
People put it in that term exactly. I mean, it is not sort of philosophical. It's deeply philosophical.
Yeah. In Wilmington, there are only 3 open seats on city council. How many candidates are running?
8.
8 candidates. We're going to hear more about that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. News director Ben Schachtman is my guest today. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. November 2nd is Election Day. Yes, that's right. It's an odd year in more ways than numerically, but it's odd, which means we're voting for folks who want to represent us on city, towns, and village boards, local government officials. And early voting is underway. The last day to vote early is Saturday, October 30th. WHQR News Director Ben Schachtman is with us as our guide through this election year, because for whatever reason, probably a staggering lack of interest, municipal elections confuse people. And speaking of confusion, Ben Schachtman, you say that Wilmington has a weak mayor system.
I do say that.
Is that a comment on the incumbent, Mayor Sappho?
It is not, because whoever wins and whoever sits in that seat sits in the seat as a weak mayor.
Oh.
Yes. Now, that's not just me being anarchistic. I know I've had my moments. But it's one particular system, also sometimes called a council manager system. What this basically means is the mayor you're used to seeing in blockbuster Hollywood hero films, right? Batman, Superman, where the mayor of New York City or the mayor of Chicago or whatever pseudonym DC and Marvel.
The mayor of Gotham City.
Yeah. The mayor has called a meeting. So yeah. In those systems, a strong mayor system doesn't mean, you know, those people are particularly more have more fortitude and will than any other mayor. It just means they do things like author the budget. They can directly hire and fire people. They set the agenda for meetings. And they are apart from the council. So the mayor will bring up something and council will vote on it. What we have in most places in North Carolina and in Wilmington is a system where the mayor is basically a councilman or councilwoman with a couple added responsibilities. That little caveat, the little asterisk, has never been more freaking important than over the last 2 years. Because one time that the mayor actually becomes quite a bit stronger, even in a weak mayor system, is during emergencies and disasters. So over the last couple of years, we've had Florence, Dorian, Isaias, and a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Under all of those, we've had states of emergency. Mm-hmm. And especially over, you know, the last year and a half, the mayor both handles some executive roles as the mayor, but also is kind of the spokesperson for the city. That's informally true all the time, but under executive orders, you are the spokesperson. The city is doing this. The city is doing that. So this is one of the questions we actually asked incumbent Mayor Bill Sappho and his challenger, Harper Peterson, who has also been mayor.
Yes. So tell us when Harper Peterson was mayor.
I hope I'm getting this right. I believe it was 2001 to 2003. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, right at a turning point in Wilmington. People will recall issues with water and sewer, once again, raising its ugly, sexy head. But it was, you know, the city was turning the corner from being a town to a city.
Whether the city should build a convention center.
Or a baseball stadium. Or, you know, maybe fix its sewer pipes.
Right.
Yeah, that was
right.
It was a tough time to be mayor. I believe the police chief was also fired during that, John Cease. It was a contentious time. And he's since gone on. He served a term as a state senator and now would like to sort of return home and be mayor of Wilmington one more time.
And have you spoken with Harper Peterson yet?
At great length, yes. and that show will actually air this Friday.
Okay.
On the Newsroom. You'll hear Harper Peterson and Sappho.
Give us a spoiler here.
Ooh, okay. Harper says something nice about Bill Sappho right at the top.
Wow.
Yeah. Did not expect that. He's actually very complimentary of the role Bill Sappho has played in that councilman.
They are both very polite gentlemen.
They are. Yeah. So that was kind of a surprise to me. A surprise from Bill Sappho is that, and you and I talked about this off mics beforehand, is that he leaned into his Greek heritage in a way I haven't heard him do before.
Yeah. And we can't say with certainty that he's never done this, but neither you nor I have seen him lead with his proper Greek name and introduce his parents.
Yes, and his grandparents.
Yes.
Who left fascist-controlled Greece in, I believe, right after the end of World War II. So that's heady stuff to bring up when you have been talking about public transportation and stormwater. But it came out in the context of asking both Harper and Bill about the city's increasingly prominent role in issues like diversity, inclusivity, social justice, something that probably wasn't on people's minds when they voted for mayor 10 years ago, but is now.
And so what are you saying about why Mayor Sappho is leading with his Greek heritage?
So in our interview, I'll give you a little spoiler, he carves a through line from his family's experience coming to the United States as Greek immigrants, trying to find fellow Greeks, you know, to go to church with, to live with, to build a community with. And, you know, the evolution of from coming in as an immigrant to becoming successful, high-profile members of society. And the ways in which we might, I think this is kind of a humble brag, but also, a political point, is that you shortchange yourself if you sort of preemptively exclude people based on their race or their gender or any other thing about them. You don't know if Wilmington is missing out on the next, you know, leading man, the next engineer, the next top cop, whatever it is. You know, racism limits your choices and that's a bad thing. And his argument is essentially, you know, had North Carolina and Wilmington in particular not opened its arms to Greek immigrants, there'd be no Sappho.
Okay. So this is also a nonpartisan election. Both of the mayoral candidates, Harper Peterson and Bill Sappho, are registered Democrats. The New Hanover County GOP has endorsed Bill Sappho as the candidate to vote for as mayor, and it's a strong endorsement. They actually say, quote, "It is critical that we reelect Bill Sappho, the entire leadership of the New Hanover County leadership," and this is the Republican leadership, "places our full support behind Mayor Sappho. Mayor Sappho is the best candidate for Wilmington and the best candidate for you." Again, that's a quotation from the New Hanover County GOP. Is that a head scratcher to you that they're endorsing a Democratic candidate so strongly?
Not at all. And it's not a head scratcher for me because if you listen to what Harper has been saying, he's been hammering on a couple issues. One is environmental issues, where he is far more aggressive than some more centrist Democratic candidates have been. And that's sort of out of line with the kind of compromise we've seen at the state level, where, for example, the testing program for PFAS was rolled back and dialed down at the behest of the manufacturing lobby, who donate heavily to Republican causes. Harper's far to the left of that kind of how do we weigh the balance between business interests and environmental concerns. And Harper point blank talked about his version of reparations or some kind of restorative investment in Wilmington's historical black community, which is just antithetical to the GOP approach to social issues. And so based on those two things alone, and maybe some enemies Harper may have made in the past, it didn't really puzzle me that much. I guess it's kind of surprising that they waded into it at all. We had Andre Brown and Will Connect on the show and asked them about, what is it sort of like?
And these are the two leaders of New Hanover County Democratic and Republican parties, respectively.
Yes, thank you. And asked them, what's it sort of like to be sort of involved in this nonpartisan but very partisan election? And, Will Connect seems to have taken a stronger hand in the fundraising part of it. But I did ask him off mic, are you tempted to just step back and watch the Democrats duke it out? And he kind of laughed and said no. And I think this is what it was leading up to.
They also were very clear about who they want people to vote for city council. And this is, again, the New Hanover County Republican Party. They say, we're thrilled to have four amazing conservative candidates seeking election for the office of Wilmington City Council: Joel Brookins, Charlie Rivenbark, Jonathan Uzcategui, and Luke Waddell. However, and this I found really interesting, because it's important that we win all three of these seats, we ask you cast your votes for Jonathan Uzcategui, Charlie Rivenbark, and Luke Waddell. While all four are tremendous candidates, we want to minimize the damage that splitting the votes could potentially cause. So they've left out Joel Brookins. They call him an amazing conservative candidate, but don't vote for him, because you might split the vote. Can you explain what that actually means, splitting the vote?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you want to make sure that everyone is putting all of their votes in the same boxes. If you split the vote, if everyone votes for, say, Charlie and Jonathan Uzcategui, but then half votes for Luke Waddell and half votes for Brookings, then, because it's sort of ranked order. It's a top vote getter, the next vote getter, and the next vote getter are who gets in. So they really want to make sure that those votes all line up. And, I guess someone had to be the fourth man on that list.
Right. And one of the things that comes up every time we have municipal elections in Wilmington is that Wilmington does not elect according to districts or wards, as some municipalities do. For instance, the city of Southport it's divided into two wards. And part of the reason that it tends to come up in Wilmington is because it's such a segregated city in terms of where people live. And so there has historically been an African-American candidate who gets the black vote each time. In this case, Joel Brookins, did I get that right, is an African-American candidate.
JB, yes, indeed.
Yes. And Clifford Barnett, an incumbent, is also an African-American candidate. So it's an interesting choice.
It is. I can add one of two things. One is that Charlie's making it Facebook official by changing parties probably changed things a little bit. And he certainly has more name recognition than almost anyone else on the ballot. I will also say that it's unclear how serious about the election J.B. Brookings was. He declined to sit down for an interview with us.
Oh.
Apparently the Cape Fear Community College Forum that's later this week has had trouble getting hold of him. I just don't know. I just don't know how serious he was about it. And I'm just being candid with you.
Okay, well, that's fair. Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about some of the issues that whoever is elected will be deciding, because that was the approach that you took with yourself and with your reporters who are talking to the candidates. One of the things that you're asking about is how people feel about the Wilmington Police Department and what needs to happen, how it's going and what needs to happen in the future. How are you framing that question?
So we wanted to be as broad and unleading as possible. We said, first, we asked, how do you feel about the performance of Chief Williams, who obviously was appointed to the office under incredibly stressful circumstances? And then, more generally, you know, what would you change about the Wilmington Police Department, if anything? Would you increase funding? Would you decrease funding? Would you shift it around? We really wanted to make sure that we weren't, you know, pointing in a particular direction with our question.
And what did you hear? Can you kind of summarize in terms of which candidates said defund the police? No, nobody said that, actually.
Actually, no one said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a surprise. If you're trying to draw a straight line from last summer to now, you might expect to hear that. But we didn't hear that.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting, actually, that Clifford Barnett was one of the candidates you posed this question to. What would you do? And he said he approved of Chief Williams' performance so far, and he actually wanted to increase funding for the police to give them the tools that they needed to do what they needed to do. Did that surprise you?
You know, it didn't. It might have. Again, it would have. A year ago, I think across the country, Democratic campaigns realized that the slogan defund the police was a losing bargain. I hope I'm allowed to say this on the air, the slogan all cops are bastards was not a very viable way to politically run a city where you're required by the state charter to have a police force. So that was part of it. And then Kevin Spears, Councilman Kevin Spears, saying up on the dais, we won't be defunding the police. Our community needs protection. When we call 911, we want the police to show up. Now, we want them to treat us like human beings, and we want them to be held accountable when they are bad actors. But no, we're not talking. And once Spears said that, I think that debate was over.
Right. Now, you also asked about public-private projects and held up the new Live Nation venue on the riverfront as an example of that, River Place as well. What did you hear from the candidates about how they feel about those projects?
I think, you know, that's kind of a neoliberal approach. You know, the idea that the government's job is to help the private sector succeed and then that will raise all boats. So some of the more conservative candidates seem to be in favor of it. But I will say, Jonathan Uscadegui and I were talking about this and he said, you know, it seems like it's a good thing, but he would also want to see more support for the small businesses and that make up so much of the economy of Wilmington, something we heard from the very left candidate, Philip White. So there was a sort of general skepticism of them because I think people on both sides of the aisle saw this as being potentially beneficial for a small group of people, of large companies that are already doing okay. And Wilmington is a couple of big companies and a lot of small businesses.
And so what you're saying is there are some not just parallels, but there's real agreement between Republican candidates and Democratic candidates in terms of what is best for the city of Wilmington. So in that sense, maybe it is less partisan in the way policy plays out.
I think when it comes to some things that are important to the character of Wilmington, there was more agreement than you might expect. Small businesses were a big part of that. The importance of downtown, even though it's outside the city of Wilmington, sort of the relationship with the beach towns. So, you know, it wasn't just a pitch battle. There was some agreement.
And that's our time. That's this edition of Coastline, the only elections-focused Coastline in 2021 fall. Ben Shockman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely my pleasure.
You can find more elections coverage at whqr.org or check out Ben's show, The Newsroom, wherever you get your podcasts. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Jonathan Furnell engineered this episode. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. And if you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org or just subscribe to the podcast. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.